from her pretty green eyes. Who shouldn't be a coffee queen at all? We do what we have to do, I say. Except you don't have to do it anymore, she assures me. Cat, she holds up her hands. Before you tell me you aren't taking my charity, I need help. My column was officially syndicated, and I'm co-authoring on the book I told you about last night.
You syndicated? Oh my God, that's incredible. I'm so happy for you. Seriously, no one deserves this more than you.
I'm excited, but overwhelmed, and so is Reese. He has his merger and a case that is heating up. We talked last night, and we agree. He can't co-write the new book with me. I need a full-time research assistant, and Reese talked to one of the consortium members, and he said you in this role looks good to the board.
If only I could afford to take it, and I hate so much that it's just not an option.
Cat, I breathe out, I can't. 3 times what I'm paying you now, but you have to work obsessively with me, she says. There's no room for the other jobs. I need you, and you'll earn the money. If Reese needs research help, I need you to cross over.
I swallow hard, thinking of her offer last night to help me with my mother's medical bills. I know what you're doing, I say. I love you, but no, I decline.
Her jaw sets. I'm going to put an ad out for the job and give it to someone else at this same pay, which means I'll have to let you go. Is that what you want?
I lean forward and lower my voice. I'm not on the stand, counselor, I say, knowing her well enough to know when she slides into her attorney persona. You aren't going to come at me like that and change my mind.
It's the truth, she says. I need help, and I need help now. Take the job.
Promise me that this isn't about charity.
I promise. I need you. I'll email you a formal offer with the salary and benefits. Reese is going to piggyback you onto his company benefit plan. Say yes. You won't be sorry.
Somehow, she's chosen the exact words Cole used when encouraging me to let him spank me. And I'm not sorry I said yes. Not sorry at all. And so I do it again. I say, yes.
Yes? She queries.
Yes, I confirm.
She grins and I grin, and as silly as it seems, somehow Cole is a part of this moment. Or maybe it's not silly at all. He's a part of a change in my life, a shift that I feel happening. I change clothes and Kat walks with me toward the courthouse, all the while plans are being made for my new job. I leave her at the door of her building with the promise I'm giving notice today. She enters her building, and I start walking toward the corner where I first ran into Cole. I suck in a breath, some part of me, no, all of me, wanting him to be there, when I know that in morning light I'd been his charity case. It wouldn't be what it was last night. I round the corner and run into a hard chest. I suck in air and look up to find a good-looking man with dark brown hair and brown eyes.
You okay?
He asks.
Yes,
I lie, because the truth is I'm not okay. I murmur an apology and rush past him, because he's not Cole. But in my fairy tale, we don't end how we did this morning. One day, I'll just happen to walk around the corner and run into Cole, and I'll be an attorney who won't look like someone chasing his money because I'll have my own. One day, or never. He doesn't even live in New York City. Sometimes the right people meet at the wrong time.
Chapter 12. Cole. Houston, Texas, 1 week later. I'm sitting behind the desk of my downtown Houston office, staring across the city, and Ashley sets paperwork on my desk. No, she says as she does. It's nothing to do with Lori, whoever Lori might be. It's the estimates on the remodel for your New York apartment. Looks like it's going to take longer than expected. How much longer? 3 months? I already have calls for additional estimates. My phone buzzes and the receptionist says, Judge Connors is on the line. Put him through. The line blinks and I say, Judge Connors, give me some good news. I'll hear your plea for a new trial in court, at which time the prosecutor will be present and be allowed to make his case for the past trial to stand. Thank you, Judge. Don't thank me, I don't do favors. Your client may very well be guilty. I simply serve the system as the golden promise of a fair trial. If he didn't get one, he will.
He hangs up.
Ashley arches a brow.
Good news?
For my client. Keep the remodel as is. I'm not going to be able to complete my move until I finish this case.
I'm not trying to get rid of you, she says. Can't you hand this over to one of the other dozen attorneys in the firm? You're a managing partner.
My mind flashes back to the first board meeting after my father's death and the moments after I proposed our growth into New York City and beyond. The vote had been one that united our team in a way my father had divided us. I didn't earn the respect I have by handing off cases that can make or break this firm's reputation or a man's future. I have to finish what I started.
You sold your apartment, she reminds me. You have to be out in 3 weeks, and I'm moving to Europe with the man of my dreams, which is not you.
Not me. She's right. It's not. She's a gorgeous redhead with green eyes, and had we met outside of work, where I keep my private life, I might have fucked her. But despite liking her as a person and working with her for 5 years now, I can say that a morning after goodbye would have come easily with Ashley. Goodbye is always easy for me. Or it was. Until Lori.
Cole!
I blink with the realization that Ashley is talking and I'm not listening. Yes?
What do you want to do?
Get the prison on the line, I say. I need to talk to my client.
You have a meeting with a potential client in New York in 3 days, she reminds me. And I put in your application to cross state lines. I know you. You're going to want to take this case.
Are you sure you can't move to New York over Europe and help launch the new offices?
She says, a finger on her chin. Let me think. She drops her hand. No, I am living in Paris for 6 months while my soon-to-be husband appraises art for the Louvre Museum. There's no way to compete. Maybe when I get back.
She taps the file on my desk.
I'll keep your hotel room in New York City. I assume I need to find you one here as well?
You assume correctly. She nods and heads for the door and hesitates, turning to face me.
I've never seen you obsess over a woman before. I hope you find her or she finds you.
She turns and leaves. No hope to it, I think. I'm going to find her.
Lori. New York City, New York. I head home from my last day at the law firm, which is ironically on my birthday, and my mother has a big new job slash happy birthday cake baked for me, despite her having to work tonight. I walk up the narrow steps of the building leading to our floor, and once I'm at our door, I pause. I always pause at this moment to steel myself for the punch in the belly I feel when I walk inside and face our odd place. Nice furnishings in the beat-up tiny space, a reminder of what my mother had, what we had, and have lost. Still, today I do it with hope, I remind myself. I am now making 10 grand a year more than I was a week ago. I'm up for the scholarship program. I have hope. I'm going to finish school and get my mother out of here, I vow before I open the door to be greeted by confetti and singing. Compliments of my mother and Marie Anne, our neighbor who is her dear friend. Both are wearing paper hats, and my mother, who is 58 and still stunning, is smiling brightly. Her hair is also colored a fresh brown, all the gray of the past 6 months gone, and she has on a nudish lipstick. Seeing her like this is the best birthday gift I could ever wish for. Happy birthday, honey, she says, giving me a huge hug. I hug her back, and I don't let go, reminded now of one of the many reasons that leaving Cole behind was necessary and why I am okay with that. She needs me, and I need her. It's not long, an hour later at most, and we've eaten chocolate cake, and my mother and Marie Anne have delighted over my new job. Will you go back to Stanford to finish school? Marie Anne asks. I think I'll finish here at NYU, I say. This upsets my mother, and I don't want her upset. She shakes her head. No, you aren't finishing here for me. I'm improving every day. And she has me, Marie Anne assures me. This is nothing to fret over, I assure my mother, taking her hand. The school might not even be my choice with this scholarship. I want to say my daughter graduated from Stanford, she insists. And you still might, I assure her. And maybe you can get back with that Neil boy you were so into. I never even met him. And you won't, I say, since Neil, who wasn't a boy but rather a 35-year-old attorney who'd lectured at Stanford and later became my whatever he was, is also the man who told me I was a fool to quit school for my mother, and he never, ever made me feel any of the things I felt with Cole. Nor would I have let him spank me. You need to get out and date, honey, my mother says. No, I think. Forget the dating. I'll take Cole's hand on my ass just one more time. I am, my mother says. My eyes go wide. What? I met someone at the hospital, an architect. Who's 10 years younger than her, Marie-Anne chimes in, and gorgeous. My eyes go even wider. When? I ask. Have you gone on a date? I met him a week ago when his daughter gave birth, she says. He's divorced, and we just started chatting and couldn't stop. He stopped by to see me twice now, and I agreed to let him bring me dinner on my break tonight. She glances at the clock over the stove. Oh my, I need to get to work. Please tell me you have plans tonight. I'm meeting friends for dinner. I lie, because while I hate lies, I love her, and I don't want her to worry. I'm happy to see her happy, even though I want to meet this architect and size him up immediately. A few minutes later, I'm alone in the apartment, and I put another huge slice of chocolate cake on my plate. I might as well grow a bigger butt. No one is going to be seeing it anytime soon.
Cole. 1 month later. I'm in New York City for the second time since that morning without a goodbye from Lori, and I'm sitting in the bar where I'd met her the second time, because holy fuck, I want to meet Lori a third time. It's Friday night. I've spent all day looking at office space, contracts, and negotiating deals. I'm exhausted, and I fly out early tomorrow when I should have flown out tonight. I have a weekend of prep for the new trial starting Monday morning, but instead I'm here. I'm here because it's the only place I know that she might be. Because I'm losing my fucking mind over a woman. I finish off a scotch because wine just isn't cutting it for me the past few weeks. A pretty brunette across the bar catches my eye. I don't turn away. I want to want her. I want to take her to my room, fuck her, and fuck Lori out of my head. Bring it on. But I don't get up. That's telling. I'm a man who goes for what I want. I pursue, but I don't get up now. She does. She walks in my direction, and I already know what comes next. I flag the waiter, Jonathan, I believe he said is his name. He hurries in my direction, and when the woman sits down, I motion to Jonathan. What'll you have? Wine, she says. House red. Wine. Bad choice. And she doesn't even know it. I glance at Jonathan. Put it on my tab and cash it out. She arches a brow. Shouldn't we talk or something while I finish the wine? I have an early flight, I say. No time. You're beautiful. This isn't personal, nor is it a reflection on you. It's me. Have a good night. She blanches. What? I stand up, walk to the bar, sign the tab, and leave.
Lori. I exit to the street, and I can hardly breathe. I don't know what made me stop by the bar where I'd met Cole tonight, but I'd had this strong compulsion to just go, sit, and drink wine of all things. And he'd been there. Really been there. I'd stood there trying to decide if I would go up to him, when I watched him share a look with a beautiful brunette. And then I'd watched her get up and walk toward his table. I know where to find him tonight, in a hotel room with a woman over his knee that he's convinced to let him spank her. My Prince Charming is no Prince Charming. That's the problem with fairy tales. They're never real.
Chapter 13. Cole. The next morning. I buckle up on the plane with one thought. This is it. I'm in court for what could turn into 6 weeks. I won't be back to New York. I have to win a man's freedom, and I have to get my head in the game and out of some fantasy about a woman who might not have even given me her real name. It's done. I have to let her go. I sit there for 30 seconds and force that thought to become reality, but I fail. Fuck. I'm not going to let her go because I'm not done with her, and I don't believe she's done with me.
Lori. I wake up and walk to the bathroom I share with my mother, who should be sound asleep in her room, considering I heard her come home hours ago. I hope she is, because one look in the mirror and it's obvious I didn't sleep. My eyes are puffy and bloodshot, and I hate, hate, hate that I laid in bed replaying the night I spent with Cole, trying to figure out why I thought he was someone I should let spank me, of all things. He's hot, he's rich, he can have millions of women, and obviously does. And I gave him something I liken to virginity in that spanking. I shove off the sink with a jolt. Virginity. Sex. Condoms, we used one, but I haven't had my period. I press my hand to my forehead. How can I have missed my period? How? I can't be pregnant. No, 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 I need to take a test. I need to take a test now. I exit the bathroom and head to my room, where I throw on sweats and a tee, then sneakers, and rush to the door. I don't even brush my hair. I enter the living room again to find my mother at the kitchen sink. Honey, she greets. Morning. Her brows furrow. Where are you going? I forgot to drop something in the mail for my boss, I say. I have to take it now. I don't wait for her response. I exit the apartment and race down the stairs, and I don't stop until I'm at the grocery that is closed. It's closed. I want to scream. I run 2 blocks, and the corner store actually has a test. In a full, workout-worthy jog necessary because I'm going to be late to Kat's place, I arrive back at the apartment. My mother is still in the kitchen. There's coffee made, she says. Thanks, Mom. I give her a wave, but don't look at her. I'm late. I need to shower. Why did I say I'm late? I hate those words. I enter the bathroom and shut the door, turning on the shower. My hand is shaking as I open the bag and peel out the box. I make fast work of undressing and peeing on the stick. I tell myself to just get in the shower while I wait for the results, but I don't. I pace, naked, inside and out right now, waiting for my future to be revealed while craziness goes on in my head. If I'm pregnant, will I tell Cole? I certainly have a lead on how to find him at the bar picking up women. I just might have to ask the other woman to give us privacy. The idea has me on my knees in front of the toilet, stomach rolling. What have I done? I look down at the test results, and it's negative. Negative. I'm not pregnant. I'm just making myself sick. And this is why I should never have spent the night with a stranger. I have my mother to take care of right now. I take the second test from the box and repeat. Same results. So why haven't I started my period? I force myself to get into the shower and finish my morning routine. 30 minutes later, with my hair dry, my makeup applied, and my tests tucked in a bag and a robe on, I exit the bathroom. My mother is no longer in the living area, but I hear her talking on her phone, laughing even, and I wonder if it's the architect. This development worries me. If my mother gets hurt, if she gets stressed, I am concerned about how that impacts her health. But it's so good to hear her smile. 30 minutes later, I'm dressed casually to work at Kat's place, in jeans and an emerald green blouse with boots. The entire subway ride, I think of that pregnancy test, and when I exit to Kat Street, I can't help myself. I go to the store and buy another duet of tests. I stuff them in my briefcase and decide I'll just sneak into Kat's bathroom and take the test. I hurry through her building and up the elevator, and the minute she answers the door, I blurt out, "Can you be a friend, not my boss, for about 10 minutes? Her eyes go wide. "Is your mother okay?" She backs up to let me enter. "Very. She's dating again. It's about me." I walk down the hallway and turn right and enter the bathroom, quickly pulling out the test kit. "What's going on?" Kat asks. "You're worrying me." I get it started, set it on the edge of the trash can, and once I've put everything back in place, cleaned up the package and me, I open the door. Do you remember the night you had to leave me in the bar about a month ago? Yes? Why? There was a man, a really hot man, and you went home with him? To his hotel. He was from out of town. I don't do that kind of thing, but it had been so long, and I shake my head. I did it. We used a condom, but I haven't started my period. I'm freaking out. I took 2 tests this morning. And? Negative, and I back up and grab the stick. Also negative. I toss the test in the trash can. What if I am, though? I sit on the toilet seat. She kneels in front of me. You're not. Those tests are very accurate, and I know this because I had the same scare a while back myself. My doctor told me stress and long hours can cause a missed period. You are a prime candidate for that issue. I know I am. They can do a blood test. I'll send you to my doctor. She's on your new insurance. Is it even in effect yet? Yes, we made sure of it. Let me call. She stands up. I need to get my phone, and we both know you need coffee. She motions me forward. I exhale and grab my things before following her. By the time I've set my stuff on the bar stools and made a cup of coffee, she's booked me an appointment for 1 hour from now. It's Friday, so we're lucky to get you in, but beware, she says as I sit down. That also means you won't get the results until Monday, which is really bad timing. Is there good timing for this? I ask, frustrated with myself that this is even an issue. Better than this. You have an interview with the consortium Wednesday. I gape. Wednesday? As in this coming Wednesday? Yes, which is why you need to go to this appointment and be able to get this off your mind. Reese's team is here this weekend working on a case. We want you to be here. You can learn from sitting in, and we'll randomly throw questions at you for interview prep. Please prep me, I say. I want to nail this, and being here and working will keep my mind off other things. You aren't pregnant, she assures me and picks up her coffee. Tell me about the hot man that actually convinced you to have some fun. No, I say, because the story of Cole's existence might be out, but he's still my dirty little secret. 1.5 hours later, I have peed in a cup and given blood and suffered through a pelvic exam. I'm now dressed again, and judging from this visit, that's the way I need to stay. My doctor, a stunning woman in her 40s with blonde hair and blue eyes, rejoins me after. All tests are negative, she says after shutting the door and perching on her rolling stool, while I sit in the chair by the exam table. It's been a month, almost 5 weeks by the date you've given me. You used a condom, you're safe. The urine test would be showing the pregnancy by now. She reviews a long list of possibilities as to why I haven't had my cycle. We can put you on a birth control pill, she concludes, that regulates your periods and hormones. We discuss this option and decide on that path because I just need to control whatever I can control, starting with my body, which I let control me that night with Cole. Wait to start it until we get the blood test back just to be safe, she says, but that's really just a precaution. I don't believe you're pregnant. She hands me a prescription, and just like that, I'm on birth control with absolutely no sex life at all, and clearly no business picking up men and playing games. I exit to the street and think of Cole with that brunette in the bar. I feel like I really connected with Cole, like I was different to him, and he absolutely was to me. I liked remembering that night that way. Why did I go to the bar last night and ruin that perfect memory? I really wish I had never seen them. I wish I could just remember being the Cinderella that got spanked by one hell of a hot man.
Chapter 14. Cole. Houston, Texas, Saturday night. I sit in the living room of my penthouse hotel room in downtown Houston listening to Jane and Charlie, junior co-counsels on the case, sitting on either side of me arguing over points in my opening statement. I stand up and watch the floor-to-ceiling windows wrapping the open space, the sun beginning to dip beneath the horizon, red, yellow, and blue swirling together in a complex manner. He didn't kill her, Jane snaps at Charlie. Her being my client's wife. He had blood all over his hands and face, Charlie argues. Jane makes a frustrated sound. Charlie is my age, Italian, vocal, and established. He loves to play devil's advocate, which makes him one hell of a second chair. Jane is young, pretty, and needs to learn restraint. I'm not convinced she can control a courtroom. I catch myself on that one. Age isn't the issue. She's Lori's age, and Lori possesses extreme restraint, and I have no doubt that she rules a courtroom when she's present. The spanking was a mistake, at least that night. That cost me any future with Lori. I made her feel like I would demand the control she feels she needs. Of course he had blood on his face and hands, Jane argues. He ran to her and hugged her. He was frantic on the 911 call. I turn and face them. He didn't kill her, I say. And the blood he had all over him isn't an indication of guilt, but innocence. No one who loves someone could leave them on the floor with a knife in their chest and not pull it out and hold them close. And that's exactly what I'm going to say in my opening statement. And I'm going to make it seem like I know what love is. I don't. I only know this new obsession I have with Lori, but I'll use that. She'll help me with this case. She'll allow me to connect to the passion a man would have for a woman he can't bear to never see again. Something I have never felt ever in my life, until Lori. Perhaps it's me wanting what I can't have, the chase and all that manly bullshit. Or maybe it's her.
Lori. New York City, New York. I sit in Kat and Reese's living room, listening as Reese's team and Kat, who always helps him with his cases, as they debate the details on a case about to head to trial. The client is a woman who killed her husband, who beat her regularly, and there are witnesses, photos, and calls by neighbors to the police. The prosecution says that he threatened her family, and so she slowly poisoned him. She says she didn't do it. She loved him. She loved him desperately. You're sure she didn't do this, boss? Elsa, one of Reese's co-counsel, asks, an older version of Kat's blonde, confident beauty. She sits in the chair to my left.
I don't represent guilty people, Reese says from an ottoman he's pulled to the center of the room. You know that. Next question.
When Reese says move on in his intense attorney mode, you move on. He's good-looking and tall, dark, and handsome. Funny at times. A bit like Cole, only different. Cole is different. I shake off that thought without further definition. The man had another woman 2 nights ago. It's time to forget him.
What's another source of the poison in question?
Richard asks from the chair to my right. He's the second co-counsel, who is handsome, confident, and currently running fingers through his longish, wavy brown hair, as if thinking about his own questions. What about a food source? Elsa says. If we can find a food source high in that toxin, we can create reasonable doubt. It might create doubt, Kat says, shaking her head in the spot next to me. Or just come off desperate and far-fetched. She's right, it would, and I'm supposed to just be listening in under a confidentiality employment agreement, of course, but I participate in my mind. I think of the person we're defending, and somehow that leads me to my father. He didn't just make a bad financial investment with my uncle. The truth is, he gambled and got in trouble. His best friend at the time was in love with my mother and tried to get my father help and her out until he was cured. He ended up being painted as the enemy. It's reasonable doubt, Elsa argues. If we get the jury asking what other source of toxin is in the food, we'll nail this. Just get them thinking about pesticides with the data that shows how eroded our food is from them, and we kill this case. But it's not a slam dunk, I think. Again, I go back to my father and his best friend, and the connection clicks in my mind. Reese and his team are asking the wrong questions and giving the wrong answers. Who loved her the way she loved him? I blurt out before I can stop myself. Who would kill for her? The entire room turns to look at me, Reese's intense stare landing on me the hardest. And the man's stare really is intense, like Cole's stare, intense, piercing, probing. A man of power who looks at you and pins you with his presence.
Continue with that thought, he says.
If you really believe she didn't do this, I say, and obviously you do, then that toxin got in his body by a human hand and intentionally. Who wanted to save her, and she wouldn't let them? Reese stares at me a couple of more moments and then points a finger in the air.
This is it. We need to find that person, and now. I'm going to see my client.
He looks at Kat.
I need you to work that magic you work to get people talking.
Of course, Kat says, standing up. Reese looks at me.
Help them chase this from here, and that interview Wednesday. You'll have another recommendation from me before it takes place. I need to hire you.
Kat squeezes my hand and gives me a smile. I'll call you when we leave our house. I nod, and Elsa and Richard look at me. Our debate and research begin, and it's invigorating. I feel like I'm back at Stanford. I feel like I'm me again. A long time later, I stand at the floor-to-ceiling windows of Kat and Reese's apartment, staring out over the pitch-black sky, speckled with New York City lights. My father wasn't a Prince Charming, but he did love my mother, and she loved him. The truth is, without Cole, I might not be in touch with my version of Prince Charming enough to think through this case. It's in the eyes of the beholder that we define our perfect fantasy. Cole gave me that for a night. I'm going to choose to block out the part where he was with another woman he was picking up at the same bar. Unless I see him again, then I'm pretty sure I'll land a properly placed knee, or unless that blood test says I'm pregnant, then I'll find him. Otherwise, he'll have to find me, and since he's moved on, that's not going to happen. Chapter 15. Lori. Tuesday morning. I'm in Kat's kitchen making coffee when my cell phone rings. I set my cup down and run to the island to grab it. Kat comes running and stops on the other side of the island, well aware of the call I'm waiting on. I spy the doctor's office on caller ID with a stomach flip and nod to her. Hello? I answer. There is a greeting, and the nurse identifies herself before I hear, "Your test is negative." Oh, thank God. I breathe out, with Kat doing the same a second later. Not that having a baby is a bad thing, I quickly add. It's just not well-timed for me. Especially, I add silently, since I don't even know how to find the would-be father, besides asking the bartender at the bar to leave him a message, which would be a long shot. Of course, she says. That's understandable. The doctor said if you haven't started your period by Friday, go ahead and get going on the birth control pill. Otherwise, follow the instructions given at the office. We disconnect, and Kat watches me closely. You're happy, right? Yes, I say firmly. I'm happy. I no longer have any reason to find Cole. It's the end of the story of the us that never existed. Asshole, why do you have to be a man whore?
Cole. Houston, Texas. After a 2-day delay in the court date, the case begins. I listen to the nonsense the prosecution ends with, pleased at how they play into my hand. This is my game, and when it's my turn, I work the room. I begin my opening statement. The prosecution will have you believe that blood and a knife damns my client. If you believe that, then I want you to go someplace difficult with me right now. I want you to think of the person you love the most in this world. Your child, your spouse, your sibling, whoever it may be. I want you to think about hugging them, loving them, smiling with them. I need you to just embrace how good that feels. Now, do it without allowing yourself to pause to think, because you wouldn't in a crisis. You walk in your front door and that person you love with all of your heart is on the floor bleeding with a knife in their chest. I've gone through this in my head, and over, I know what I would do. I would run to that loved one and try to find a sign of life. I may or may not pull out the knife. In the moment, I think we can all say we do what felt right, what we believed would save our loved one's life. I, for one, would call 911, just as my client called 911. And then I'd offer aid. Any chance I had, I'd hold my loved one. I'd hold them and hold them and hold them, praying that it wouldn't be the last time. If my client is guilty for doing those things, then I say I too would be guilty because I would do those things. The prosecution has nothing else to convict him on. So ask yourself, would the very same thing that I would do, which I suspect many of you would do in the same circumstances, convince you that Callum Moore killed his wife? The prosecution has to give you proof he killed her. All they want to do is punish him for loving her. I hope you will not. Recess is called after I leave the floor. I head to the back of the courthouse, out the private exit, and I do what I do at breaks. I make a path to the side door, step outside, and plan to think through what comes next. The assistant DA, Carrie Monroe, a pretty blonde with an attitude and legs that go on forever, is waiting on me. I know this specific detail of her legs because we've been friends with benefits on occasion.
You did good in there. We should celebrate tonight.
A woman who knows how to just fuck and move on with no strings attached should be a definitive yes, a way to get Lori out of my head. I wait for the familiar stir of lust, and it doesn't come. Not tonight.
When, then? She persists. You're moving.
I'm focused on this case with plans to be on a plane to New York City the day after it ends. She blanches.
Wait, are you saying goodbye now?
I am.
Okay. Huh. Well, I don't know what to say.
She purses her lips.
Fine. You were still sexy as hell in there, Cole. I love watching you. I'll just do it from afar.
She closes the space between us and kisses my cheek.
Good luck, but you won't need it. You always win.
She leaves then, and holy hell, I'm not sorry. I wouldn't have said no to Carrie before that night in New York with Lori. What kind of wicked spell am I under? Chapter 16. Cole. 2 weeks later. I sit on a private jet waiting for takeoff on my way to New York, my MacBook fired up with the headlines. Cole Brooks wins again with his client exonerated of the murder of his wife. Hotshot Brooks cornered the victim's business partner on the stand, caught him in a lie, and hammered him into a dramatic confession. That's the way to leave Houston with a bang, I think, flipping to a new screen and pulling up the digital contract that officially merges my firm with a New York firm run by a close friend and the best damn attorney I know, next to me, of course. I shut the lid to my MacBook and my cell phone rings. I glance down and find my new partner and oldest friend's number on the caller ID. Reese Summer, I say. Or is it partner now? Partner it is, he says. You got the executive contracts, I assume? I did, and I'm on the plane now waiting for takeoff. Is your apartment ready? I know your remodel got dicey. The movers left days ago, and my assistant, or rather ex-assistant, considering she is on a plane to Paris right now, assures me that the key is waiting for me and I'm ready to move in tonight. It's Wednesday. We'll see you Friday night at the office for the client meet and greet. You'll see me tomorrow. I have work to do. I need to get my staff in order by Monday. I'll check in when I land. We disconnect, and the plane's engines roar to life. The restraints my father placed on our growth are gone, and a chapter of my life ends and a new one begins. New York is where I belong now. Funny thing is, I wasn't sure I believed that until it welcomed me in an extra special way. I pull the note Lori left me from my pocket and read it again. Hello, and everything that followed was perfect. I didn't want to ruin perfect with a bad goodbye. My lips curve. The thing about coming off a win for me is it's like a conquest that makes me really want another. And her name is Lori. At least, that's what she told me.
Lori. After hours of trying to track down leads for her book, with her deadline approaching, and another new book on the horizon, Kat and I are on her living room floor, both in jeans and socked feet, with a box of chocolate between us. It's an empty box of chocolate since she's worried about her book, and I'm worried about why I haven't heard any news on the outcome of my interview. How's your mom? Kat asks. Dating, I say. I think. I don't know. She said she met someone. I roll to my side to face her. Why haven't I heard anything? She rolls to face me as well and doesn't ask what I'm talking about. She knows. You'll hear soon. Just knowing I'm not out of the running would be nice, I say. When I left, I felt good. There were six of them in the interview. You said you do well in groups. You're a trial attorney. Of course you do. I'm not a trial attorney yet, I remind her. You connected with Judge Griffin, the lead decision maker, she reminds me. That is huge, and I think you might be getting some news soon. I sit up. What do you know? She sits up too. I can't tell. Cat! She laughs, and the front door opens. That's Reese. She pushes to her feet, and I join her. What's going on? I ask. She glances over at me. You'll see. Reese appears in front of us in his tailored suit and glances down at the chocolate.
I take it you two don't want to order pizza?
Pizza sounds good, Kat says. Or champagne. Show her. Show me what? I demand. He hands me an envelope. I quickly open it and blink at what I see. This says I am awarded the full scholarship available by the program with monthly installments. I look between them. This just means I make it to the next round, right? This is what I would get if I am actually awarded. Monthly installments instead of a lump sum, which is fine, of course. It's an amazing opportunity.
You were awarded, Reese says. With the merger of my firm with the Texas firm, we joined the consortium. It was in the works even before I brought this up to you, but it's why I brought it up to you. We're in line for first pick for the next candidate, and I told them I want you.
I don't let myself get excited. Thank you, but I have so many questions. It takes 6 months, right? So you requested me, but I have to finish the process?
We fast-tracked you. The entire panel believed you are a talent that needs to see her rising star now, not later.
Excitement starts to build. I'm awarded? I'm accepted?
Yes.
Reese confirms.
You are indeed accepted and awarded.
I look at Kat. What about your books? Lori, she says, these books and my column are my career. It's time for you to have your career. Now I look at Reese. This can't be a favor. This has to be because...
Every firm they have on board wanted you, he says. The judge had them fighting for you. We just made a donation to the consortium as part of our membership, which gave us first pick. I could have passed. I didn't.
I start to tear up. When do I start?
I was going to say next week,
Reese says,
but my new co-managing partner starts tomorrow. He's going to put together his team, and I want you to have a shot to be on that team. Human Resources will coordinate your school, income, and scholarship funding tomorrow morning. Welcome to the newly minted Summer and Brooks Partnership.
Chapter 17. Cole. I enter the recently expanded offices of Summer and Brooks, the official new name of the firm. The receptionist, Julia, a 30-something blonde with a pixie cut, is on the phone, but glances up from behind her mahogany desk and gives me a big smile. By the time that I've crossed through the seating area lined with high-back chairs and stepped in front of her, Reese has sniffed me out. "Finally he arrives," he bellows, offering me his hand, which I accept. "And so it begins," he says. "And so it begins," I say. "We're really doing this." "We already did it," he says, motioning to the wall behind Julia and the imprinted logo that reads Summer and Brooks, Attorneys at Law. "It should have been Brooks and Summer," I say, "alphabetical and all." "I was in New York first," he says, "and this is the new corporate office." In other words, the wall in Houston should say Brooks and Summer, since I was there first. "Whoever gets the first win under the new company," he says, "gets the first name spot." "The first million into the firm," I counter. "I can live with that," Reese concedes. "But nothing that was on the books before today counts." "Keep the name," I say. "But the bet's on. Loser buys the winner a ridiculously expensive bottle of scotch. I'll pick the bottle when I win." Reese laughs. "I can live with that," he motions me forward. "I'll see you to your new office." "Because it's right next to your office," I joke. "Too damn close," he replies. "I tried to change that, by the way," he says. We start walking down a long hallway just past the reception area. "The construction team couldn't make it happen," he says. "Not without putting you in a closet, and that would have looked bad to clients." His phone buzzes with a text, and he glances at it, a shift to business slipping into place. "We have that scholarship placement starting today," he informs me. "She just made it to HR. Right, I say. "The one from Stanford that you know personally? That's her, he says. I set up the staff that will be working in your core team in the conference room at 9. The partner meeting is at 10. I want to give you a heads up on a couple of things in advance. We enter the double glass doors that are the entrance to the newly built executive offices, with Reese's corner office on the right and mine on the left. I wave to his secretary, Maria, who is Hispanic, 40-ish, and always brimming with attitude. She greets me in with a wave and a smile. Reese and I head toward my office, and despite the wide berth between our doors that allows cubicles and offices between us, Maria murmurs something muffled in Spanish that's said a little too loudly. Something to the effect of Reese and I both being fine-ass men. I laugh right along with Reese, who softly says, "She doesn't know I speak Spanish." "I want popcorn and a good seat when she finds out," I say, entering my window-lined corner office. And considering I haven't seen it since it was sheetrock in construction, I pause for a minute, just to take it in. Decor, compliments of Ashley. The sitting area is done in black leather to the right, a conference table to the left. "You're unfortunately going to have to make your team meeting a quick one," Reese says as I cross to sit behind my new shiny mahogany executive desk that appears to have no drawers. "I have to be done with the partners meeting no later than noon because I need to be back in court at 2, which is why I want to circle back to our new intern again." "She's the one you said was Kat's research assistant, right?" "Yes, and that made getting her on our team when everyone else wanted her tricky. She's prideful. She doesn't want charity or to feel like she's gotten a handout. Her first instinct was the reason I wanted to hire her as a favor."
"Was it?" I ask.
"Hell no," he says. "I've let her sit in on some of my team sessions and she's good, really damn good, which is why it pains me to say that I think, based on the personal relationship she has with myself, and even more so my wife, she needs to be yours. But if you get her, you get what comes with her. That means you take on her educational program requirements." He indicates a file on the desk. "That has the details of what you're required to do. She's worth it, man. She's a future star."
"What's her name?"
"Lori Havens."
I go still. I'm not sure I can breathe, but the puzzle begins to come together.
"And she works at your apartment with Kat?"
"Daily," he says. "Why?"
"I might have met her."
He narrows his eyes on me.
"Is that a good or bad thing?"
"It's more a matter of record."
"Of record," he says flatly. "That's an interesting choice of words."
I dismiss the comment with a wave of my hand. "I just ended a trial. I'm still in courtroom mode. I'll read the file and meet with her." I glance at my watch. "I'll see you in the boardroom in 15 minutes.
Reese knocks on the desk. "In other words, get the hell out of your office."
"Always liked how good you were at getting the point," I say.
He studies me a moment and stands up. "See you in the conference room."
I watch him cross the room and exit, shutting the door behind him. I scrub my jaw, and I find myself momentarily resisting opening the file. It can't be her. She's too old to be an intern. But then I remember the story Reese told me about this particular intern. Her father died and her mother had a stroke right afterward. Top of her class at Stanford. Ivy League, as I suggested that night.
Fuck. This could be a problem.
I open the file and find no photo. I start reading. She's impressive on paper, and if she's the Lori I know, she's impressive in all kinds of ways. I stand up and walk to the window, hands on my hips under my jacket. It's her. I know it. I feel it. It has to be her. Her situation explains why I couldn't find her. I never once considered looking beyond active attorneys. Beyond that night, I'd ruled out her knowing who I was. I didn't feel that when I was with her, but maybe she did. Maybe that's why she left. If she left then, though, why would she be here in my offices now? My gut says she wouldn't. If I'm right, then like me, she was in my inner circle, and that's how our paths crossed. But she never heard my name. She didn't know me. She doesn't know I'm here now. This is going to get interesting. If, of course, this really is my Lori. The woman whose pretty little ass I spanked. I'm damn sure ready to find out.
Lori.
I wear my most professional blue pinstriped suit and the only pair of expensive heels I have left in my closet. When I arrive in the office and step into HR, I'm ready for this day and this challenge. I exit HR in time for a meeting I'm to attend with a new partner, with the comfort of knowing that while we won't be leaving the rat trap soon, by the time I finish school, my mother will be debt-free and in a nice apartment. To achieve my dream and take care of my mother is everything. Excitement fills me as I grab my notepad and pen from the cubicle I will call home for the next year, and I head toward the conference room. I near to find the table already lined with a good dozen people, none of whom I've met as of yet. Reese is in the front of the room.
"Welcome, Lori,"
he greets and motions me to the only remaining seat at the end of the right side of the table.
"Everyone welcome Lori Havens,"
he announces.
"She's here as a special program intern. She's been granted a full scholarship by the Merrick Foundation, with only 9 months left to complete at Stanford."
There are murmurs of congratulations, and obviously a sense of that being an honor. It feels good. "Thank you, everyone," I say, claiming my seat.
"As you all know, my new co-managing partner officially made his new home here with us in New York City. His highly successful Texas-based operation united with our operations. Coming off a hell of a win in court back in Texas, please welcome Cole Brooks."
Cole. The name radiates through me and I can't breathe. It can't be him. It can't be. He walks in the door, tall, dark, and good-looking in a perfectly fitted, ridiculously expensive suit, and oh God, it's him. It's Cole. My new boss is the man I let spank me. He's my dirty little secret. Cole and Reese shake hands. There is clapping. I sink back into my seat and scoot a bit behind the person sitting next to me, who is thankfully a rather broad-fit, large man.
"I'll leave you all with Cole,"
Reese says, giving Cole a nod and then heading for the door. Cole turns his attention wholly on the room, and I slink back behind the profile of the giant man to my right, out of Cole's line of sight.
"Let me tell you about me,"
he says.
"I like to win. However, we do not take cases solely for financial gain. Don't expect me to accept any case you bring to me based on the payday. And you know why? Every day when I look myself in the mirror, I want to like what I see, which is an undervalued quality in this profession. We take cases that we defend passionately."
He gives us all a few moments to absorb his words and then says,
"I've reviewed your files, but I'd like to put names with faces. Please introduce yourself and tell me your job title, as well as your best asset."
Dread fills me with the realization that soon all eyes will be on me. His eyes will be on me, and he'll know I'm here. I'll have to tell him what I didn't want to tell him that night. I'm not an attorney. I'm an intern. I'm now his subordinate, and he's my boss. My boss who is free to fire me. Who will think I knew who he was that night, that this is some big scheme? Thankfully, I am given a moment to breathe through this idea, as he indicates the man closest to him, on the opposite side of the table to begin. For now, I hyper-focus on the other speakers, willing myself to calm, learning about my new co-workers just as Cole is. I quickly surmise that this room is literally his support staff that includes a mix of administrative staff, interns, and a few junior-level attorneys, who I assume will second chair with Cole on cases. Slowly, so very slowly and yet too quickly, the introductions lead my direction, until there is only the very large man in the seat next to me, who until this point has been a shield that kept me hidden.
"Michael Norton,"
he states, while I remain blocked by his big body.
"Attorney, recent Yale graduate, joined the firm 6 months ago. And my biggest asset is I, too, like to win and win with integrity."
And that's it. It's now my turn to declare myself. I inhale and lean forward on the exhale and say, "Lori Havens." My eyes meet Cole's. His meet mine, and there is a punch of electricity between us that I pray no one else feels. I dread what comes next. The admission I avoided in that hotel room. "Merrick Foundation recipient," I say, and then, "intern." I pause a moment on my best asset, and then I decide I'm here, I'm me, and I can't be anything else, and that means I don't take the safe route. I know how to size people up with incredible accuracy. In other words, I sized him up. I never quit, I add, and I know how to set priorities and limits with great discipline for myself and those around me. The message in those additional comments, I'm not leaving unless he fires me. I can't. I won't. But I also won't be bending over his lap again. He doesn't immediately speak. He just looks at me, his eyes an unreadable ice blue. Seconds tick by before he cuts his stare and speaks to the masses.
That's all for today. I'll be in touch with each of you individually over the next 2 weeks. Lori, come with me.
Chapter 18. Cole. Side by side, Lori and I walk down the hallway toward my office. Neither of us speak, but the charge between us is combustible, a fuse slowly burning to the moment of imminent explosion. I want her. No, I'm obsessed with this woman, like I have never been obsessed with anything but winning. A part of me had thought that was about losing with her, but I now know it's not. It's about her. Just as it was the night I fucked her, about how different she is in ways definable in her beauty and spirit, and others not definable at all. My interest, our attraction which sparked off the damn walls in that room back there, is now complicated by the fact that my company represents her dreams and her future. More so, I'm not only the man she dared submit to, when she doesn't submit, but I'm now her boss, and regardless of reality, the man she's certain to believe controls that destiny. Which means that I can't just shut her in my office, pull up her skirt, and fuck her the way I've wanted to fuck her since the moment I met her, no matter how hard and hot I am for her. And that's damn painful right about now. We reach the executive offices and I hold the door open for her. She doesn't look at me, but there is a moment before she passes, a moment neither of us move, where we are right back in that hotel, the air crackling with sexual tension. Her chin lifts slightly, defiance in the act that tells me she intends to push me away. That defiance does nothing to derail my appreciation of her perky little ass hugged by her skirt, and soon to be hugged by my hands again. She pauses just inside the lobby area to wait on me, and I'm damn glad Maria isn't present, while her and my secretary's desk remain unoccupied since I have yet to find one that comes close to filling Ashley's shoes. I turn toward my office and Lori doesn't miss a beat, keeping pace with me. But again, when I open my door for her, she doesn't look at me. She enters, and I follow her inside, expecting that explosion. And the minute I shut us inside, she's whirled on me. I didn't know, she says. And yet you left. I don't wait for her reply. I walk around her before I walk right to her, and I do it before I pull her to me and lick my way to her submission again, when that would be highly inappropriate of me. At least at this very moment. I'm not willing to put the desk between us, so as I walk toward it, I turn to lean on the wooden surface, between the visitors' chairs. That had nothing to do with the here and now, she says, facing me now and dogmatic enough about her response to close several steps between us. I didn't know, she repeats, grabbing the back of the chair just to my right. I had nothing to gain by sleeping with you, she adds. The scholarship program is independent of you. As for leaving, I'm not leaving now. I need this opportunity. I deserve it. I read your file, I say. You do deserve it, and I wouldn't let you leave if you tried, which makes me your new boss and mentor. I'll be in charge of your program completion. No, she replies instantly. No, you can't. We... Fucked? That has nothing to do with our jobs. I can't work for you. Transfer me. There are two people here who can sign off on your program, me and Reese. I'm the only one of the two of us that needs staff. I cannot work for you, she says. There has to be another way. I have to talk to Reese. She turns and heads for the door. I force myself to stay put when I want to go after her. And tell him what? You fucked me and now it's awkward? She stops, as I knew she would, and whirls on me. I stand, straightening. We stare at each other. A battle of wills. And just as I expect any warrior to do, and she is a warrior, she steps toward me and I her. We stop, toe to toe. Stay, I say simply. This is not workable, she says. We fucked, I supply again. That changes nothing about our jobs. I'll give you a winning record and you're good enough to own that record with me, with credit where credit is due. We did things together that you don't normally do, I say. I get that, Lori, and I'm damn glad you did them with me, but that, don't say it changes nothing again. It changes everything.